Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From the Jerome L. Green Performance Space here at WNYC, Brian Lehrer with you. Thanks a lot for listening today. And to some of you, thanks a lot for listening for the last 20 years. This program debuted on September 25th, 1989, so today marks our 20th anniversary. Later in the program, we'll have a 20-year news and history quiz to mark the occasion. That ought to be fun. We have an audience here in the green space that includes some other 20-year-olds. We will see how their lives and the life of this program have run parallel or not. And our first guest today is also celebrating a 20th anniversary of his big professional debut. The filmmaker Michael Moore burst upon the scene in 1989 with his documentary about the auto industry, Roger and Me. This week, his brand new film called Capitalism, A Love Story, made its New York premiere at the New York Film Festival and opened in theaters on Wednesday. Now, for those of you listening at home, for those of you in the theater, when we promoted this program, we told you that Michael would be able to join us by video link, but that turned out not to be the case. There was a last-minute change, and instead, he's here in person. Please welcome Michael Moore. Michael in a Rutgers cap today. Why Rutgers?
Well, I've been representing for the women's basketball team now for a couple of years. So, by the way, sorry about. This is not that radio show.
You know?
No, I understand that. Yeah. I know. I get a little confused here sometimes, but I wore my radio garb here. I didn't realize there was going to be a studio audience and cameras. Radio with cameras, so...
But if people saw you in a suit and tie...
Well, that's true, and it's not like it would be that much better than what you're looking at right now.
So, it is great to have you here, Michael. Welcome to WNYC's new Jerome L. Green Performance Space. And listeners, as always, when we're in the green space, you can also watch our show today via live streaming video at WNYC.org. Now, since the table is about at waist level, you won't be able to see Michael in his shorts exactly... But in the rest of his radio garb, so go to WNYC.org right now if you want to watch today's program as well as listen. You can watch us live with Michael Moore and see some of the clips of his new film that we are about to play.
Shorts is a generous term, by the way, so thank you for that.
I saw the film at the New York Film Festival opening Monday night, and Michael, it is amazing. It is at once heartbreaking, infuriating, and hilarious, and I guess that's what you do. Why Capitalism, A Love Story?
Well, as you mentioned, it was 20 years ago that I made Roger Me, and actually it had its premiere here at the New York Film Festival 20 years ago this week. And for these 20 years, I've been making other films. The films are about subject matters, issues, things, whether it's General Motors or healthcare or whatever. It seemed like each time I went to make one of these movies, the central problem, the core of what was wrong, always spoke to this particular issue of an economic system that seemed unfair, unjust, and not very democratic, small d democratic. And I decided this time that instead of just picking the next issue, I'm just going to go to the heart of what I believe is the matter, and bring up an idea that in the year since the crash, we've heard a lot of different analysis and explanations and positions, but I haven't heard on the talk shows or the op-ed pages anybody just come out and say maybe the problem we have is the very economic system itself, that it is not a system that's well-structured for the 21st century. And I'm really tired of the debate between capitalism versus socialism. A 16th century economic system versus a 19th century economic system idea. I mean, we are in a whole different time right now. And aren't we smart enough to to restructure ourselves in a way that's going to benefit the people. Because actually, by not having done that, we're now at the point where the wealthiest 1% in America have more financial wealth than the bottom 95% combined.
And if people didn't know that, you've got the graphic in the film. I want to play a clip, and this recalls Roger and Me. Let's start there. This is not from Roger and Me. This is from Capitalism, a Love Story. But it recalls your debut as you return to GM headquarters.
For 20 years, I tried to warn GM and others that this day was coming, but to no avail. Maybe now they'd listen. So I went down to the headquarters at General Motors one last time to share some of my ideas.
You don't have permission, you can't film here.
Huh?
You don't have permission from General Motors, you can't film here.
I'm just going up to see the chairman.
No, sir. No, sir.
You know, I've been doing this for like 20 years.
I understand,
sir. I have not been let into this building for 20 years.
4-7 to 7-6 Bravo or Alpha. It's Michael Moore here to see the chairman.
Gentlemen.
Yes.
You need to get prior permission. You cannot film here, okay?
But if I can't go in and get permission, what am I supposed to do?
I guess they're right. Breaking up is hard to do.
Stop that. Don't do that. Let's go on the building.
And if you ever got in, what would you say to them?
You know, I actually thought they were going to call my bluff. You know, like, here it is all these years later.
They're in much bigger trouble than you are. Maybe they could use you now.
Well, I actually came that day with some ideas on how to save General Motors, how to save our industrial infrastructure, which we do not want to collapse. If we lose that, that's a whole ball of wax we don't even want to consider. First of all, just on a national security level, to allow you to have no factories, to lose your workforce. I mean, just think about that. But forget about the national security part of this. I just think that we're in this new century. The internal combustion engine is not really what we should be building. It's not good for the planet. So what are the new transportation systems that we need to get us through this century? What can we invent? What can be created? What already exists that we're not using? Light rail. Why don't we have a bullet train? The Japanese just celebrated their 40th birthday of their bullet train. They don't need a bullet train. They got an island. You know, just we've got a 3,000-mile wide country.
We need a few bullet trains.
Well, the technology exists for us to get from New York to L.A. in 10 or so hours. I mean, on the ground. It takes that long just to get to JFK and sit there and wait. I just think we're so much better than the way that we've behaved and the way that we function and so that's why I made this film and I'm hoping that, you know, it'll generate a good discussion.
And here's another clip from Capitalism, A Love Story. This kind of brings us much more up to date, bouncing off the financial collapse of a year ago. This is on one level about a very special, very contemporary kind of bank.
The scam to swindle people out of the homes they already owned was masterful. Here's how it worked. First, tell these homeowners that they own a bank, and that bank is your home. So if your home is worth $250,000, that makes you a quarter millionaire. You're sitting on a gold mine. You own your own bank, the bank of you. And you could use your bank to get more money. Just refinance. Everyone's doing it. Of course, hidden in the dozens or hundreds of pages of fine print are tricky clauses that allow the bank to raise your interest rate to a number you didn't know about, perhaps so high that you won't be able to repay your loan. But that's okay. If you can't repay it, we'll just take your house.
A scam. You frame that as a scam. Not everybody got caught up in what they thought was going to make them money, make the homeowners money. A scam.
That's right. That's exactly what I think it is and has been. And frankly, now the FBI agrees with me. They've reported that 80% of this mortgage fraud that's taken place that helped to contribute to this crash that we're in, 80% of it, of the fraud, was committed by the banks and the lending institutions, the mortgage companies, not by the borrower. But right after the crash, Brian, what did we hear right away? Oh, it's all these people that shouldn't be owning a home, you know, a subprime, they took out loans they couldn't afford and blah, 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 blah. Well, of course, there's always been people who live beyond their means. We all have that brother-in-law, right? That's nothing new to any of us. But those people have never caused the crash or a crash before. What happened here was fraud committed by the banks, fraud committed by the mortgage companies, and then the number one cause of foreclosures in this country, the number one cause of foreclosures and bankruptcies are medical bills. Medical bills, number one. If we had universal health care, this part of the crisis would be much less than what it is right now.
And some of the heroes of this documentary are people resisting eviction. Did you know the guy who made those videos of Acorn workers that have been in the news? He was reportedly inspired to go after them because they were breaking into foreclosed homes to help people resist eviction.
Wow. That's really a sad, sad case. You know, first of all, I just, in defense of Acorn, I mean, I've worked with them, known them for, 20 years, when they started in Arkansas. They've always been about helping the poor. They've been very aggressive about helping the poor and sticking up for the poor. In any organization, you're always going to have a couple of people that screw up or do things they shouldn't be doing, starting with our own families. You know, which is a judgment.
You're picking on that brother-in-law again.
I know. I can't get that guy out of my head. He keeps hitting me up for a loan. You know, but that's what Wall Street's become. You know, they're like that brother-in-law. They lose the money and then they come back to you and go, "Hey, give me another loan." No, you lost the money, and yet that's exactly what they did to us. They lost. First of all, they lost not their money but our money. They lost people's pension funds, parts of their 401k. And then they come back to the people and say, "Oh, hey, now give us some more money." And by the way, make it a blank check. And no limit as to when we have to return it.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC in the Jerome L. Green Performance Space with filmmaker Michael Moore. We're going to take a short break. Then we'll come back. We'll watch two more clips from his brand new film, Capitalism, A Love Story. We will take some questions for Michael Moore. Hear from our audience. You can start raising your hands if you have a question, and we'll come to you with a microphone. Also, listeners at home or wherever you are with the telephone, 212-433-WNYC to talk to Michael Moore today, 212-433-9692. And remember, again, you can watch us if you're near a computer. We are live video streaming this event today at WNYC.org. From the Jerome L. Green Performance Space here at WNYC, Brian Lehrer and WNYC with filmmaker Michael Moore. You know, in this new movie, Capitalism, A Love Story, he does not let, you said small d Democratic before, as opposed to large d Democratic. He does not let the Obama administration off the hook. Here is a clip about our esteemed Treasury Secretary.
Geithner has been a failure at pretty much everything he's done in life. Most of the institutions that destroyed the economy were under his direct regulatory authority.
How did he get the job as Treasury Secretary?
By completely screwing up his job as President of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Of course it makes perfect sense. This is not new to Washington. People who will give you the wrong answer, but the answer you want, are invaluable. And they often get promoted precisely because they're willing to say and do absurd things. And these are the people that promised us that financial deregulation would make all of us rich. And these are the people who were personally made rich.
Tough stuff. Again, everything he did was a failure.
Yeah, and that is, by the way, that's Bill Black. He was the bank regulator for the federal government who helped to uncover the savings and loan scandal back in the 80s and went after them for what they did then. And he's all over this right now. And, I think you don't need to be a bank regulator. Just common sense would tell you, if Tim Geithner was the head of the New York Fed while these financial institutions downtown here were playing with people's money and turning it into a virtual casino and taking out crazy bets against the money, and then bets on the bets, and then taking out insurance policies on the bets, and then insurance policies on the insurance policies. Who is watching the hen house here? I mean, who is in charge? He was in charge.
And so Obama, what, is no better than Bush in this respect? Or, I mean, he appointed this guy.
No. Yeah, he would have to do.
I said in this respect. In this respect.
No, I think, here's what I think about Obama. I think that he inherited a catastrophe, a number of catastrophes. Who would want this job at this point? I mean, God bless him for taking it. So I think that he came into this at the beginning probably as ignorant as you or I were. I mean, who amongst us could really stand up here right now and explain credit default swap or derivatives and the whole scheme here? And so he went to the people who would understand it. And actually, that kind of makes sense because the big banks, you know, they hire former bank robbers to advise them on how to prevent bank robberies. And who better to do that? Who better to help clean up this financial mess than Larry Summers and Tim Geithner and the people who helped to create it? So let's hope that's what Obama is thinking, that they're in there now to clean up their mess.
Who has a question for Michael Moore? Ma'am, hi.
My name is Heather Content. I'm from New School University. I was wondering, now that you've tackled capitalism, the head of the Leviathan, what's next?
Well, at the end of the film, I address that question. And not that I want to give away the whole thing here, I'll just tell you this one piece of it. Basically, I say that after 20 years of this, unlike Brian in his 20 years, I'm tired. I'm tired of 20 years ago telling you that General Motors wasn't going to continue this crazy way that they were operating. I stood on the Oscar stage and said that there weren't going to be any weapons of mass destruction found in Iraq, and I was booed off the stage. I made a healthcare film 2 years ago to get this debate and legislation hopefully passed. And at some point, which now it looks like it may not happen, at some point, I just am a human being. I have to say, look, if they aren't going to make this happen, I've got other things to do. And so the challenge to the audience in the theater is I need you to rise up, get involved in the democratic process. Democracy is not a spectator sport. Get off the bench. And if you will, then I'll keep doing what I'm doing.
And since you brought it up, let's play that clip. We had that ready to go to a call to action at the end of Capitalism, a Love Story.
We're here to get the money back for the American people.
I understand, sir, but you can't come in here.
Can you just take the bag?
No.
Take it up there?
Absolutely not.
Fill it up? I got more bags. $10 billion probably won't fit in here. We want our money back!
I went to all the banks.
You've seen this guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We're here to make a citizen's arrest, actually.
Hey, just drop it from the windows.
And everywhere I went.
I'm going to take it back to the U.S. Treasury, right in this car. It's safe. You can trust me.
So that was Michael Moore. For those of you who only heard the audio, going from Goldman Sachs to Morgan Stanley to a few other places to try to get the money back for the American people. That's not exactly how you want people to get involved, right?
No. I commandeered a Brinks truck and drove it around Lower Manhattan. But you never know. You know, like I said, they could call my bluff at any time. But I want people, first of all, to encourage President Obama on the health care issue to, as he rethinks this now, see, part of his problem is the reason why the base isn't out there enthusiastic and in support of him is because he took a half measure. He started with the compromise position. You don't start with the compromise. You start with what you really want, single payer, a system that's like every other Western democracy where everyone is covered, universal, true universal health care. He starts with, because I think he's a nice guy. I think he really, truly wanted to hold out the olive branch, work with the other side. They have no interest in working with him. They have absolutely, and they won't. And I hope he realizes that now and says, okay, you know, from now on, 75% of the people in this country want universal health care. That's what we're going to have. End of story.
Let me do a little experiment. We've got about, 30 or 40 or 50 college students in the audience today. How many of you, if you had a choice, would vote for a single-payer health system, however you understand that term, in the United States? Raise your hands if you're a college student, only among the college students. Okay, if you would not be ready to sign on to that, raise your hands. And all right, well, single payer wins with a few dissenters. Among the others, how about everybody applaud if you would go for single payer today? Applaud if you're at least ambivalent about single payer, not convinced. All right. Well, you have a pretty pro-single payer crowd right here, so your theory works at least in this room. Ryan in Neptune, you're on WNYC with Michael Moore. Thank you for calling. Ryan, do we have Ryan? Ryan, now we got you. Hi. Ryan, go ahead. Okay, that's not going to work. Let's go to – oh, let me try one more time. I think we finally heard him. Ryan, are you there? Can you hear me? All right, I'm going to ask Ryan's question because I think it's an important one. He was going to say, I don't think you have democracy without capitalism. Mm.
Just the opposite. capitalism is the enemy of democracy. The economic system that we have now is a pyramid scheme. It guarantees that very few people will be at the top of the pyramid. And part of their job is to convince everybody else in the rest of the pyramid to work their butts off all their life because maybe someday you too can be on top of the pyramid. Well, guess what? Only a few people can be up there. And I don't think that it is democratic when you've got a pie on the table and one guy comes in and takes nine slices of that pie, which is what we've got now, and then there's one remaining slice for the other nine to fight over.
But in the audience Q&A that you did after Monday's New York Film Festival screening, a guy challenged you to say, if you're a socialist, if you're so critical of capitalism. And as I recall it, you said the opposite of capitalism is not socialism, it's democracy. Is that what you said?
That's right. Democracy or...
But democracy is not an economic system.
And well, but that's what we were taught in school. The reality is, that's like saying capitalism has no politics attached to it. It's just an economic system. That's not true. Capitalism actually is a political ideology. And we can create economy in an economy that has as one of its, I think, two central underpinnings, democratic values, democracy. In other words, you and I control the economy. We the people. That's what a democracy is. Quit calling this a democracy just because I get to go vote every 2 or 4 years. Oh, then it's a democracy? But it's not a democracy as far as how the economy is run, something that actually affects me in my daily life. It's not a democracy in the workplace. Where else is there a democracy other than behind that curtain at those voting machines? We have to have democracy in our economy, and we have to have a moral, ethical code at its center that always asks the question, when it comes to business, is this good for the people? Is this good for the planet? And if it isn't...
All right. Who else in the hall has a question for Michael? Over there. Hi.
Hi. My name is Aaron Golombeski with Live America. Michael, you and I have a mutual friend, Jack Stanzler. So I've been wanting to meet you for a long time. Very excited you're actually here.
Well, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. 2 years ago, I was working for a large law firm, and I walked into my managing attorney, and I said, what exactly is a credit default swap? And she said, I don't know. Our clients made them up. So when did you learn about credit default swaps, and do you understand them yet? Because I don't.
I never heard the term until the crash happened in the film, and Brian will probably can tell you about this because he saw it, but there's a very, very funny section of the film trying to explain derivatives and credit default swaps, and eventually in the film, someone who was a vice president at Lehman Brothers sits down with me down in the Battery there, and tries to explain to me what a derivative is, and even he can't do it, and he finally just gives up, and he says, you know what, honestly, you're not supposed to know what they are. That's why we hire the top mathematicians, the top scientists, to come in and create these crazy mathematical schemes that he said, actually, remember he said this, he said that if a regulator comes in from the federal government to try and you know, if he actually understands it, we hire him.
Which is what those regulators want to do eventually anyway. Did you hear those Bernie Madoff tapes the other day? He was talking about how the people from the SEC would come in, and they were all young, and they only want to work for the SEC for 5 years, and then they want to go to the hedge funds that they're regulating, so how tough are they going to be?
That's right. Well, there should be a law against that.
So. You are, and I think that's a good example of it, that scene you were just describing, to me, an investigative journalist. Do you see yourself that way? You find documents and footage that no one else finds. You have a secret Citibank document in this film, footage of FDR proposing a new Bill of Rights in the 1940s that even the FDR library, I think you said, didn't have. Do you see yourself as an investigative reporter?
Well, yes. I mean, I see myself as a muckraker in the old tradition of the way it used to be, when people used journalism without fear or favor, and where, as I.F. Stone once said, what he operated by, this journalist, investigative journalist from the 50s and 60s, all governments are run by liars and nothing they say should be believed. He started with that premise. All corporations are run by liars and nothing they say should be believed. And then they should have to prove to you what they're saying is true. Our journalists these days start with the assumption that they're actually telling the truth, and then occasionally they'll go and find something where they're not telling the truth. This FDR footage that's in the film, I have a great archival team. They found this lost footage of him, something he wanted to film so that the American people would see this just before he died. His vision of America after he would be gone. No one has seen this. We found it essentially buried in an archive in South Carolina. They didn't even have it labeled. It was just in an unmarked thing, and our people, my people, went through this and actually found this. And you'll see FDR is going to be seen for the first time ever in this film this week, he wanted to say these things to the American people.
And I don't think there is a spoiler possibility for this film. I think anything we say can just make people want to see it more. But let's leave that one for people to go and see in the movies. But even the notion that a president of the United States would propose something as dramatic as a new Bill of Rights, and obviously it was built around economic issues, the way we revere the Bill of Rights as a sacred document, and a president would propose a new Bill of Rights. He obviously thought this stuff was very, very important.
But it got
lost to history.
Yeah, it got lost. when you see the film and you see his Bill of Rights that he's proposing, you can see why they probably didn't want a whole lot of people to actually hear and see him and what he was proposing for a new America.
Who else? Question? Last question in the audience? Right there. Hi.
Clarence Pearson, adjunct professor at Columbia University. I wondered, after you take your rest, whether you would consider doing a film on our educational system, preschool through college.
That would be longer than a two-hour film, I think.
Yeah, and it is the number one question I get anywhere. Please, can you do something on our educational system? Brian, we have a real crisis here. We have 40 million functional illiterate adults in this country right now, 40 million who cannot read and write above a fourth grade level. We have another 40 to 50 million who can read on a fourth grade level but can't comprehend, can't analyze what they're reading. We've created a semi-literate nation. We've eliminated civics classes in our high schools. We've eliminated economics classes. So we've created an ignorant population. This is dangerous in a democracy to allow this to happen. And there's another whole thing, maybe I'll come back sometime to talk about why we're not going to have a daily newspaper next year. We're in the last year or two of actually having a newspaper to read. There's a reason for that. Capitalism, greed, helped to kill our daily newspapers. They say it's the internet. They've got the internet in France and Sweden and Germany. And let me tell you something, their newspapers aren't closing this year. So why is that? And why isn't that question being asked? But, you know, we only have so much time and...
And you've got to go, and we've got to go to our next segment. I know you think it has something to do, to give this away, because I heard you say it the other night, with our advertising-based model rather than selling subscriptions and newspapers, selling for the content.
In Europe, circulation.
Do it in 15 seconds.
Yes, in Europe, circulation is the number one cause of the funding. Here it's advertising. They have to think first to get their readers to buy the paper. They've got to have really good content. They have a good writing. We've McNewsed our writing. Because we've had to dumb it down because we've dumbed down the population, but that dumbing down hasn't been an accident. And let me finish with this one last thing. That in the 17 elections between 1940 and 2004, the majority of American newspapers endorsed the Republican candidate for president in 14 of those 17 elections. That means they endorsed the party that wanted to dismantle the Department of Education, that wanted that funded education and put it on the lowest rung of the ladder. They helped to create this semi-literate nation. The newspapers did. And they cut their own throats because now they don't have readers. It would be like General Motors trying to get rid of Driver Ed in high school. How crazy is that?
There are about 5 follow-up questions in that statement that it wasn't an accident.
I'll come back sometime.
You'll have to come back.
I will come back. Let me tell you, I lived here in New York for four. We live back in Michigan now, but I lived here for 15 years. I love this show, I'm so honored to be your first guest on your 20th anniversary show. I can't tell you how much personally this means to me, and how I, when I travel the country, I wish that there was a Brian Lehrer in every city I went to, that there was this morning show. So thank you for this, really.
I actually had no idea that you were a listener. That is so, that means so much to me. Michael Moore, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank Michael Moore. His new movie, Capitalism, A Love Story. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.